the Brandon Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by Metashare. To find out more about the radio show or to order Brant's new book, Blessed Are the Misfits, go to branthanson.com.
This being the beginning of the week, we do a thing called Joke Spot. We have somebody for this?
We do. Leanne's on the line. Leanne, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. This is Sherry. You still have some time to talk to us?
Yes.
Great. And Brant Hanson is here too.
Ahoy, Leanne.
Ahoy.
Hi, Brant.
Hey.
What are we doing with the ahoy thing? Because
I
got a text from you yesterday that said ahoy.
Yeah. I'm saying ahoy now a lot.
Right now? Yeah.
It's kind of cool. And I'm trying to get it going. I tried to get it going before and it didn't work, but I think now's the time.
Okay.
So, you know, the first time that Alexander Graham Bell talked on the phone, the first word he said was ahoy.
Was it?
Yeah, they thought that that would be the way people would answer the phone.
But it's not.
You can make that happen, Brant. I believe in your power.
Thank you. Yeah. Some people look at what is and say why, and then some people look at what isn't and say why not.
Let's try it.
Something like that. So, if you want to be relaxed, you need humor. So on Monday, we do something called the Joke Spa to help people relax. So we got Leanne ready for you. Ready for Joke Spa?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, welcome to the Joke Spa. We welcome you into this environment. It's very nice. It's nicely lit. It smells good in here. And we have our lab coats on, and it's very professional.
It is. Yes.
So lie down in this thing. You put in.
Are there aromas that we're going to offer her?
Yeah.
Does she get to pick?
Sure.
Okay.
Do you want pine scent or lemon fresh? You choose.
Those are cleaning.
What was the first one?
Pine. Pine tree.
Pine. Oh. That's very nice.
Okay. All right. Well,
pine scent.
Get the pine going here.
And also, here's where we put you, we relax you with the joke. This is the humor leads to the relaxation. So that's why we call it the Joke Spa. So she's lying there.
Sure.
And I turn and I say, oh, by the way, Leanne, I tell you, do you know that 1/5 of people are 2/10?
Oh, my goodness.
Do you get it?
One fifth is math,
but it's also like 2/10.
2/10, T-E-N-S-E.
It could be either.
Oh, yeah, it's a play on that. Sure.
I can sense the tension melting away as you fake laugh.
Thank goodness we have this pine aroma.
Yeah. There's nothing like a good fake derisive laugh to make all of your cares go away. Jesus just continues to be fascinating. There's this story I was just reading. It starts with, he's got this great approval rating. I can't remember the exact words that were used. It's in the book of Luke somewhere, but it's like everybody loved him at this point. Mm. Things were going sky high, big crowds, everything's going great. Before the end of the story, this is like a tiny part of a chapter. It's like a few paragraphs. By the end of a few paragraphs, he goes from huge approval rating to people were trying to throw him off a cliff. It happened that fast. And it's because he didn't do any tricks for him and he said he wasn't going to. This is when he went back to his hometown. Mm-hmm. So it was sky high. And then he said, I'm not going to do the stunts. Mm-hmm. And they looked for a cliff. Like, we're really fickle. If we're not entertained,
oh man,
we really get upset. It's like, man, do the thing. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're looking for, he just will not be reduced to a formula and he won't be a circus act. God doesn't operate that way. Football is part of America, and we should acknowledge that right now because people were playing it yesterday. They were playing it Saturday. They're playing it tonight.
Yes, that is right. Oh, is there a game tonight?
Oh, national championship.
Oh, that's right.
I think. Anyway.
As you can see, Brant and I are all
very dialed
on
in.
Top of it.
If I could just change the subject just a little bit from football.
Mm-hmm.
If there were a collegiate showdown, national championship for most Nobel Prizes for public universities.
Yes.
The University of California, Berkeley would win the national championship.
Okay.
But the runner-up, my alma mater.
Oh, great.
The University of Illinois. Let's just...
And what? Woo! What fictional prize is this again?
Nobel Prize.
Okay, no, I mean prize for your...
Oh, we get some kind of trophy with a brain on it.
Yeah.
And
that was the fictional part I was talking about.
We got in on that, but it should be real because it's important. Show on Netflix with Marie Kondo is her name. I think she's a lady who comes in and organizes everything. And she has people do some goofy stuff. Like, she's always smiling. Like, hey, look at your house.
And even if it's a mess?
Even if it's a mess. I think she's from Japan.
Okay.
So she has a translator there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she does. But she tells you, and here's what she does. Everybody's like, that's so goofy. And it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is goofy, but it's weird because she's swerving into something important, I think.
Mm-hmm.
She has you, as you're throwing things away, thank the things.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, thank you, shoes. I'm so glad I had you. But then you get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, stuff in the garage. So on one hand, it's silly, and it is because these things can't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not animate objects, obviously. So in that sense, it is silly. The other thing, though, but she's hitting on something deep, which is you become more content and more willing to part with extra stuff when you're thankful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm glad I had this thing. It's hard for me to throw things away, honestly, because I feel dumb about buying it in the first place and I didn't use it enough or something. But if I'm able to just be thankful for what God's given me, I want to say thank you to him, but I want to be thankful for this stuff. I was allowed to have this and
it's okay to let it go.
It's okay to let it go. And contentment, it comes out of gratitude. So glad you are listening. My name is Brant. Sherry is here too.
My cousin is an assistant general manager at a hotel.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, a lot of times, she has to write people up for things they've done.
Yeah.
And she brings people in. She said it never ceases to amaze her that even in the face of a mountain of evidence that you are wrong, you will stick to. No, because
exactly.
She had an actual video of an employee, a nighttime employee, sleep at the desk.
Uh-huh.
For a long period of time. People were coming in. They were taking pictures of the person's sleep. All of that.
Uh-huh.
So she addressed it with the girl before she let her see the video. No,
yeah.
No. She turns her laptop around. Is that you? Well, yeah. But I didn't. Like, she stuck.
Still denying
it. She stuck with it. What is that in? I think we've all done it on some level.
Oh,
maybe not
totally.
On that level. But what is that?
The
a mountain of evidence says I am wrong. And nope, I'm right.
Well, it's because it creates dissonance. This is what's going on in our minds.
Okay.
Because we all think we're good people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the self-righteousness that Jesus keeps putting his finger on. So this is all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to get rid of that dissonance somehow. And when we're confronted with, look, you're not being good like you said,
mm-hmm.
we're busted. Our culture doesn't teach us how to handle that.
Good point.
Like, it's just, but Jesus is going, repent.
Mm.
Like, it makes life so much better if we just will. Just like humbly, you know what? I did. You're right. Like, it's just so much more freeing instead of constantly defending this illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Let the illusion go. This is how Jesus is addressing it.
Mm-hmm.
Rethink. Start over, like, and humble yourself. You know, one thing in this Netflix show about getting organized, it's new, it's out. It's a lady comes in and she's the expert in getting rid of stuff or whatever, but she starts with the family, and this family had toddlers. She starts sitting them down in the living room, and I don't even know if she knows what she's tapping into here,
mm-hmm.
but she just starts with, okay, first we're just going to be silent. And so she sits down and they get their kids settled down. They're both holding a mom, dad. Everything's in disarray.
Mm-hmm.
They've been living that way. They're all been stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
And she just has them be quiet for a minute. And as somebody who's a believer in God, I always think, well, prayer is important for a lot of reasons. But one of them is just quieting yourself down. And what's interesting, if you sit with your family and just be quiet, consciously quiet in the living room with your family, mm-hmm. who does that? For like even a full minute. Well, I would say predictably, the mom starts crying.
Hmm.
She just started crying. And she said, no, I'm not sad. I'm not sad. But once you get a chance to slow down and actually look around and think about these people and what God has given you, even in the midst of all the mess and all the running around and all the busyness, I'm not surprised that there's emotion there. I think it's right under the surface all the time, but we rarely slow down to go, oh my goodness, God's been good to me. It is called denial, and it's one of our mechanisms we use. It's called a defense mechanism, and we all do this. We were just talking about somebody being busted at work for falling asleep, and no, I didn't fall asleep. Well, here's a video of you, you know, for 7 straight hours with your feet up, asleep. But that's one of our defense mechanisms, and it's an ego defense because our ego wants to tell us that we're good. And so I've been reading a lot about this, and there's another phenomenon called confabulation.
Okay.
And what that is, we humans, it's putting together a story, like a fable, confabulation.
Okay.
So we're really good at assembling a story on the fly to convince ourselves that we weren't really asleep or something. Like, no matter what we've done, we'll come up with a fable, a story to fit it, to make it okay for us so that we can protect our own ego from the truth. Which is a terrible way to live, but it's the way we're all designed. It's amazing God doesn't just zap us.
But he's trying to free us.
He's trying to free us. Like, just humble yourself. Humble. Do it before it happens for you. This seemed pretty cool, I bet, at the time. It's kind of funny. You know how you drive through one of those automated photo things, and if you commit a violation, what are the words I'm looking for here?
Traffic cameras.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly playing $25,000 pyramid.
And I didn't know where to jump in. Ready? I thought, I'm not.
Drive through.
Red light.
Traffic violation.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Sorry. Yeah. So they send you sometimes a picture. It's like a picture of your license plate.
Yes.
So here's the thing. So this guy responded cleverly. He sent a photo of $140 back to the police.
Hey.
And they followed up with a
photo. What was their photo?
I'm not making this up. They sent him a photo of handcuffs.
Well, that's a fun little game between the public and the authorities. That's nice.
It is. I'm glad everybody has this kind of time, but that's pretty clever, you guys. You won't know this if you're young, but there was a show called Happy Days, and the Fonz was on it. And I was just thinking about the Fonz because in one episode, he was wrong and he couldn't say it. Do you remember this?
No, I don't remember that.
He had to admit he was wrong. It was too cool. So he was like, I was, he couldn't get it out. And they played that joke for like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
but
sounds about right.
Honestly, we're not told how to admit we're wrong.
I have learned and am learning. One of my go-to mechanisms when I'm wrong is to make it about something or someone else.
Change the subject.
Yes. Right. Or even if it stay in the subject and wonder why, well, how, why when so-and-so did such and such, or
bingo,
you didn't do this or that, and completely deflect from whatever I did.
Totally.
And now make it about you or make it about another person.
Totally. You see that in issues all the time, like in political issues or whatever. It's like, can we stay on this thing for now?
Yes.
Like, I get it that we can go back and say, well, you guys, but you, but
I remember you saying something right one time. You said, is this right or is this wrong?
Yeah. Can we stay there? And if we want,
right,
talk about the other thing that happened. But can we park here for a second so we can figure out whether it's wrong or not?
Let's put it in park have to ask myself, am I right,
right,
or am I wrong?
Right. Before we change the subject, can we do that? But that, you're right. It's a defense mechanism. We have breaking J.R.R. Tolkien news.
Oh boy, we haven't had that before.
For the podcast. Not a lot of new stuff breaking with Tolkien.
Well, he's been dead for some time.
Okay, you don't have to go on about it. Man.
Sorry.
Wow.
Well, he is.
But I love him.
I know you love him, Brant, and his memory.
Yeah. Some of your favorite people are deceased.
I'm sorry.
Bam. Do you feel like, see how it feels though now?
Didn't mean to offend.
Now that I said that though?
Yes, I get it.
Okay.
Right.
I'm not offended. I'm just cut to the quick.
Okay, all sorry.
Right. they actually put this in relevantmagazine.com, which I appreciated. The love story, it reminded me of him and his wife. And so there are certain people, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think this guy was on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
Tolkien. I suppose that's been discussed before. There's nothing new under the sun.
And what brings you to that conclusion?
It's because I see so many things that he does that remind me of other people on the spectrum.
Okay.
Including his relationship with his wife. So when he was 16, he met this girl, Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. That's not her name. Edith is her name. I'm not sure what I'm talking about. Okay. Well, Mabel was the name of his mom.
Okay.
And he lost his dad early on. And so he was with his mom and they moved around, but he met this girl and she, when he was 16, she's 19. He had become Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's what his mom had done, he had been kind of taken in under the wing of this priest.
Mm-hmm.
And the priest was really good to him and acted as a father, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And told him, because this 19-year-old girl was Protestant,
mm-hmm.
that he shouldn't have anything to do with her. But he loved her.
Mm-hmm.
But he also thought, what am I going to do? This man whom I respect told me, I can't even see her. I can't write her. I can't even communicate from now on.
Wow.
But I love her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, again, for me, I can understand that feeling. Like, I have had one girlfriend my whole life. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a Tolkien thing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And once you are like, no, that's the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the woman.
Right.
So he couldn't communicate and it was a nightmare. You can imagine for an adult, if you're in love with somebody, but for a 16-year-old,
yes.
He wrote to his son later on, kind of describing that season.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, quote, I'll read from the letter. I had to choose between disobeying and grieving or deceiving a guardian who had been a father to me more than most fathers. Between that and dropping the love affair until I was 21. That was the rule. When you're 21, then you can talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret my decision, though it was very hard on my lover, but it was not my fault. She was completely free and under no vow to me. And I should have had no just complaint. If she had married someone else. For nearly 3 years, I did not see or write to my lover.
Ooh.
It was extremely hard, especially at first. The effects were not wholly good. I fell back into folly and slackness and misspent a good deal of my first year at college. The day before he turned 21, he wrote a letter to her declaring that he'd never stop loving her and he wanted to get married. And her response was, I'm already engaged.
Ooh.
So he flew into action. It's the determination thing too. Mm-hmm. I see this with people I know and love. He flew into action, got on a train, found her. She was staying with a family friend. She met him at a platform. They went into the countryside that day and she realized this is a good man.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent her engagement ring back to her former fiance and said, I will marry you. So mm-hmm. no communication. And she had been hurt because she's like, what happened to you?
Right.
Where were you?
He dropped off the face of the earth.
He had to explain the vapor lock he went into where he's trying to be a good son
mm-hmm.
and true to his word, but also being so overwhelmed with her to say, my emotion has not changed. I still want to marry you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got married, obviously. Mm-hmm. She died in 1971 when she was 82, and then he died 2 years later.
Mm.
And their marriage is fantastic. And here's one biographer said, those friends who knew Ronald and Edith Tolkien over the years never doubted that there was a deep affection between them. It was visible in the small things, the almost absurd degree in which each worried about the other's health, and the care in which they chose and wrapped each other's birthday presents, and in the large matters, the way in which Ronald willingly abandoned such a large part of his life and retirement to give Edith the last years in Bournemouth that he felt she deserved. And the degree in which she showed pride in his fame as an author. So she was supportive of him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just great stuff. It's just, they were very bound together. I love the struggle when someone wants to do the right thing. It's so much more interesting to me
mm-hmm.
than no struggle. Like wanting to do the right thing and struggling is just, it's truly romantic, like overcoming that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And quite frankly, the denying of yourself for a greater thing.
Right. Oh my goodness. Right.
Is something that we don't always talk about in this culture.
No.
You're supposed to get whatever you want, when you want it, and how you want it. And we celebrate that. But you're right. There really is no, it's nothing valiant about that.
No, but when your heart is saying this, but you're going, but larger thing trumping my heart, like take mm-hmm. a step back going, yes, here's my heart feels. I want to. And I love that God and Edith
mm-hmm.
honored
yeah.
that. I mean, mm-hmm. not every story ends that way.
That's true.
But if it didn't end that way, I think God would honor it in another way mm-hmm. where he'd be like, thank you. That was exactly what I needed.
This has been the Brant and Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by MediShare. To find out more about the radio show or to order Brant's new book, Blessed are the misfits. Go to brandhanson.com.